This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you're looking for something to do outside tonight, Richie St. John plays with the Accidental Moguls down at Crown Center Outdoor Concert Weekender Concert Series at 6 o'clock. The music starts. They're going to play for a couple of hours. And then at 9 o'clock, they will show The Princess Bride, so a music and movie doubleheader. Richie St. John played with the Accidental Moguls and then The Princess Bride. And I say that's inconceivable.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia.
Who said they didn't? They've never seen that.
Inconceivable.
Why won't you watch that?
Inconceivable.
It's one of the greatest movies of all time.
It's you know what? It's damn it. It's delightful.
And everybody loves it.
I'm also excited to watch that for the first
time. Kids, grown ups,
with my
boys,
daughters,
girls, and everybody loves that.
That's the first place I ever saw a concert in my entire life.
Where?
Yeah.
Crown Center.
Oh,
Three
yeah?
Dog Night.
Oh boy.
Three Dog Night.
How old of a boy were you then?
The ink is black.
Probably in like fourth
white grade.
I mean, Bob liked that, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Bob, I hated it. It's so hot, and I was like, why am I here? And then they played Jeremiah was a Bullfrog.
That's
and
right.
All made up for it.
Steve Santian Sr. took me to see Johnny Rivers down there when, I believe, Secret Agent Man was the song that he liked. Nice. How about Tim Grunhardt?
He's a secret agent,
you
man.
You are, aren't you? Where are you, Timmy? I can't find you.
I'm down here in Florida.
Flaw.
Yeah, Colin has a couple of days off before he has to report to Lawrence for camp, so we took him down here for a little R&R, and we did a little fishing yesterday, caught some nice fish, and just kind of chilling out a little bit before the NFL season kind of gets kicked off and underway as we have gone into training camp already, which is awesome, and just excited. I just can't believe the NFL season's upon us again. For some reason, this offseason went faster than others. I don't know why. Maybe because last year it just seemed like everything dragged on and everything was just in a state of flux because of the whole COVID situation. And I know we're still dealing with some of that right now. But, you know, last year they were talking about maybe not having a season and training camp was all kind of messed up. So, yeah, it just kind of all of a sudden it's here. And it's exciting, and I know you're going up to St. Joe next week. And
thank you.
We talked to Josh Briscoe last night. He's up there, and did some nice reporting from. He's the eyes and ears of 810 right now, and you'll be the eyes and ears next week. So we're excited. Good, great coverage, and a lot of exciting things going on. Some things that obviously need to be worked on and corrected, but that's part of training camp, and some answers need to be. Made for the Kansas City Chiefs this year, and that's why they're there working on it.
All right, so I know that you're always on Instagram, so you probably saw this, but so Justin Houston posted. Have you heard about this, Timmy?
I the only thing I saw Justin Houston working out of the Chiefs helmet on.
Right.
The only thing that I saw.
So Justin Houston made a post on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
and it's six pictures of him working out. He looks tremendous. Nate said he looks ripped and sinewy and very lean and mean. And so he's working out. And then the first two pictures of just him, working out. And then
a beautiful watch on, by
right.
the way. Looks like a very expensive, a shiny watch.
And then all of a sudden, in the third picture, it's just like he's wearing a pair of shorts. He's obviously got some shoes on. As Nate said, a watch, shirtless. But then a Chiefs helmet. And then he has another picture where he's in action, again, wearing a Chiefs helmet. So three different pictures of him wearing a Chiefs helmet. He's a free agent. Do we read anything into this? Is this just Justin Houston having some fun on the gram? Should we not even talk about this? Timmy, tell us. What the hell's going on here, please?
Well, I think the first thing first is that I think he's having fun with people. Secondly, when you aren't in camp and you're trying to, get in football shape per se, or you are trying to kind of acclimate yourself to the football season. Now, obviously, you've got to wear a helmet. So maybe he just has a Chiefs helmet that he had laying around in his basement from when he left. And, you know, one of the things Chiefs always do is when you leave the organization, they give you a helmet that you wore that last year. So maybe he just has that helmet and wanted to wear that helmet so he can go work out and get a feel for, you know, that's the worst part.
It's all the convenient.
That's the worst part of, you know, the acclimation period for any football player is kind of getting used to wearing that helmet again. So maybe that could be a thought. You know, hey, listen, I think it'd be a great thing for Justin Houston to come to the Chiefs. I know a lot of people out there say that he's got hard feelings of the Chiefs, didn't leave on good terms with the Chiefs, yada, yada, yada. But remember, as they said in The Godfather, it's business, not personal. So he just has to realize this is a business, and, you know, whether you left on good terms or bad terms, it's still a job. It's still a great job, and it's a great organization. So I think Justin Houston, if given an opportunity, would come back. And I think it'd be good for the Chiefs. For number one, I think Justin Houston was the juice and the energy of that defense for many years, and you can never have enough juice and energy during a football season. Number two, I think he's hungry for a Super Bowl. You know, he left, and all of a sudden the Chiefs go and win a Super Bowl. That can't be good for the psyche. I know that when I retired, it'd be a nightmare scenario for me for the Chiefs to win a Super Bowl the year after or 2 years after. And not that I didn't want them to win, but it would have been a nightmare for me. I just like, oh, my gosh, I played here 11 years, and then I leave, and they go to the Super Bowl and win it. It would have been just horrible. So I think Justin Houston has a little bit of that. That, you know, he's like, listen, the Chiefs have an opportunity here in the next couple of years with Patrick Mahomes as quarterback to maybe get back to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. I'd like to do that. And then the last thing is I think he'd be great for that room. You know, Chris Jones is a nice leader, and I think Chris Jones is probably the leader of that room. But it'd be good to have Justin Houston back, a veteran football player, a guy who's kind of been through every situation you can imagine in a lot of different defenses. And it'd be a great sounding board for Chris Jones, especially learning a new position. So I like the idea of Justin Houston coming back. I don't know if he's playing with us. I don't know if he's just getting acclimated with a helmet put on, or he is like sending a message to everybody, listen, the Chiefs are talking to me. I like the Chiefs. Maybe look for this to happen. But I think, personally, it would be a good thing for the Chiefs to have a Justin Houston back.
Or maybe he's saying, I'm still a free agent. Training camp has started. Will someone sign me, please?
That could be it, too. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you could read into it. But I think that probably the first thing I said about just getting acclimated to wearing a helmet, because when you get to football camp, you're going to obviously have to put that helmet on, and by the time he gets in, it might be full pads.
He could have used a Colts helmet, Timmy.
Yeah, he could have.
You know what? Maybe the Colts don't give it a helmet.
He could have used a Georgia helmet. All this SEC talk show is an SEC product.
Hey, Steven, I'm not going to say anything negative about your take right there, but if you've ever had
I've got
a
no take.
Helmet,
I'm just trying to start things.
If you ever had a helmet, right, mm-hmm. and helmets shrink, all right? So for some wonder, they don't stay the same shape. So that Notre Dame football helmet that I have in my basement, or even the Chiefs helmet that I have in my basement that I wore 20 years ago, those things should barely get them on your head anymore. Right.
Maybe your head grew.
Hey, that Chiefs helmet ain't new. He just played with the Colts.
Think about that.
You got a big head, didn't you?
For all you guys out there, as you know, if you have your high school helmet, or maybe even you're lucky enough to play in college, or maybe the NFL, and you're listening, and you're trying to squeeze that helmet back on, you just cannot get it on. So the likely scenario is that the only helmet that fit his head was the one he had from the Chiefs.
You know, I just had lunch at Ninfa's with my buddy Jerome Tucker, who works for Riddell, helmet company, and there's a shortage of helmets right now. It's like
there's a shortage of everything right now.
Yeah, there is, because it's some of the same plastic.
Well, I have a shortage of height.
So. Some of the same plastics that they're trying to, that there's a shortage on to
I
make,
heard that, Granny.
Putting car parts and stuff like that.
What did he say? What did he say?
Not repeating it.
Okay.
I said, I have a shortage of something, too, but we won't talk about
that. My wife just called in. Yep, you do have a shortage, Steven.
Yeah.
Click.
Wow, I have a shortage of patience. Nice.
Right.
That's usually what my wife says.
So,
there is a shortage of helmets. You're exactly right. I talked to our great coach, John Holmes, of Bishop EA. Mm-hmm. You know, he made an order, and he's still waiting for us helmets to come in for the young men as we start football here in the next couple weeks. So, yeah, there is a shortage of helmets. Very good take on that. Very good observation, Nate. And you know, there's just shortage of everything. If anybody, you know, we're waiting for a darn oven down here. We're waiting for an oven now. We ordered it in May and still haven't got it. So,
seems like you should have got the oven by now if you ordered it in May.
All we have is a open fire and a spigot.
Nah.
Food well, you can cook some good food on
that. Yeah, cook something on the spit. Mm-hmm. Okay, so listen, again, he's much better now. You wouldn't know what a tough week this has been for Nate Buchady because of conference realignment. He's lashed out at almost every football program in the Midwest. He's lashed out. He doesn't want to be a part of any conference. He doesn't like any conference. Nothing will satisfy him. He wants to keep the band together. We get that. And so we've tried to move on from that. But then I made the mistake of playing a soundbite from Mecole Hardman for him. And that got him all fired up again. And now he's been very emotional about this. And so we're going to play this for you. And I just want to ask you, is this much ado about nothing? Or is Nate Buchady justified in being very confused and bewildered by Mecole Hardman's answer here to this question? Let's play this for Tim Grunhard, and we'll get his response, and you tell me if Nate's overreacting.
You throw much with Pat during the offseason outside of practice?
No, I didn't get a chance to get up with him. We just wasn't in the same vicinities, you know, when he was training and everything. But we got time in camp, plenty of time in camp to get that chemistry down and the timing down. So it shouldn't be an issue.
Now, Timmy, you sat here in this studio last week and told us that you knew, someone told you firsthand about Patrick Mahomes working out at a field around here with some of his receivers. He's been known to do that. That's not uncommon in today's NFL. And so, Nate, if you would, make your case, and we'll see if Timmy thinks you're crazy or crazy like a fox.
First and foremost, I am rooting for Mecole Hardman.
That's right.
I like the guy. We've interviewed him, really enjoyed my time with him.
He appears to be a great guy.
Yes. I'm not saying this because I'm trying to pile on him. And maybe there's more information.
You want the best for him.
Likely there's information that I don't know. But listening to that answer,
you likely
listening to that answer shocks me. It confuses me. It bewilders me. After last season, and then particularly after the Super Bowl, but even after just last season, if you would have asked me, hey, what person on the team would stand to gain the most from spending as much time with Patrick Mahomes as possible, I would have told you Mecole Hardman. Probably behind that, I would have said Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But Mecole Hardman would have been at the top of my list. There seemed to be several instances last year where they weren't exactly on the same page. And Sammy Watkins is gone. They spent the entire offseason looking for a replacement as the number two wide receiver on this team. He's going into his third year, so this is, in my opinion, a bit of a watershed year. You're either, if he goes into this season and is exactly what he's been the last 2 years, that's what he's going to be for the rest of his NFL career. But the third season, if he comes into the season and takes a huge step forward, then the ceiling becomes much higher for him. So this is a massive season for him, in my opinion. The opportunity is there to make a big step forward. The possibilities to grow his career are there. And he has the best quarterback on the planet to do it with. And it seemed to be an issue last year that they were not on the same page. For all those reasons, it seemed to me that this man would do anything he possibly could to spend as much time with Patrick Mahomes as possible this year. So that the idea that they weren't in the same vicinities, that surprises me. I don't know, and maybe there's a good reason for it. I didn't hear it in that answer, but especially when you said, Stephen, that other guys were working out with Patrick Mahomes this offseason, seems like it was possible.
That's what Timmy said.
So I don't know. That's my reaction, Timmy. And I offer up that there's more to the story possibly, likely, that I don't know.
Yeah, likely there's more to the story. Yeah, we may never know. Let's kind of break down what he said. He said, you know, I wasn't in the same vicinity. I didn't have an opportunity. I don't like that answer at all either. I think if you're in town, then you find QB1 and you go and work out with QB1 wherever he's at. And if he's having a clinic at a high school, then you go and you work with him at that clinic. Or if he's having a meeting at his house, you go to his house and you watch film or whatever they do. Okay, so I don't like that answer. Now, I do agree with him that there's time. I mean, he's got some time in training camp. That's what training camp is for, is to build those relationships and get that timing down and maybe build the trust up. So I do agree with that. I don't think it was mandatory for him to be there with, you know, I know that Pringle was there. I know that Cornell Powell was there. I know that Noah Gray was there. Yeah. I know there was more guys there that were working with him. And I think that it would be very, very important for Mecole Hardman to be there. I don't like that answer at all either. I don't get it. If you're in town, you find a way to get there with your starting quarterback and work with him and run routes and build the trust. There was a comment made from Patrick Mahomes after Travis Kelce left the field the other day because of a strained, back and hip deal that he was dealing with, that he trusted Noah Gray, and Noah Gray made some plays, and they just went on with the practice with the baby Kelce. And, a lot of that was developed, in the off season because they were able to work together. So I don't like the answer either. I don't get it. But let's see. And hey, listen, Andy Reid put it on the line. He said that Mecole Hardman has to have a great camp. Okay? He didn't say have a great season. He said he has to have a great camp. So his booty is on the line for, working maybe for that second receiver spot or, work for that third receiver spot because, listen, you have Byron Pringle who he doesn't have the talent that Mecole Hardman has, but, maybe the trust is there. You have DeMarcus Robinson who's working for that spot. You have Cornell Powell who's working for that spot. You have Antonio Callaway who impressed yesterday in practice is working for that spot. So when Andy says, and you got to listen to the little kind of hints that you get, Andy, he doesn't just say things just to say things. He doesn't misspeak. He says Mecole Hardman has to have a big camp. This is an important camp for Mecole Hardman. And I think that says everything. Yeah. I think that they want to see if they can trust him. And you're right. Last year he wasn't on the same page, and he made some mistakes, and his route running wasn't as good. You could see that Patrick Mahomes many, many times was frustrated with Mecole Hardman. But does he have the ability to make that adjustment and that growing spurt, for lack of a better word, that Tyreek Hill did? Tyreek Hill became an elite wide receiver about this time, his third or fourth year. And that's what I think they expect from Mecole Hardman, and we'll see if that happens.
Let me get to a couple of tweets. Can you hang out for another segment, Timmy?
Yeah, man, this is great. I got a lot to talk about.
We got
Creed Humphrey, who had some struggles with his snaps. I want to talk a little bit about Joe Tunney's comments. Let's hang out if we can. That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll get into the offensive line after this, but Matt Derrick has tweeted that Anthony Hitchens is back in practice after missing yesterday with a tweaked hamstring, but no sign of Travis Kelce, who left yesterday with tightness in his back and hips. And I can empathize with that. I've had tightness in my back and hips since about 2008. And James Winchester has returned from COVID-19 reserve list, and he's on the field snapping this morning. And so there's some updates from the Chiefs. Now, here's a couple of other updates. One about the Royals, and don't get mad at me, Jake. I'm just telling you what I see. Now we have John Morosi tweeting out, rival teams expect Whit Merrifield to remain with Royals today unless KC is overwhelmed by an offer. I think we all kind of knew that, but clearly John Morosi's been told no. And again, I'm not just speaking specifically about Merrifield, but with the wild flurry of trades that happened yesterday, you've got some other teams, like Mike McFarland said earlier, that have to respond. If you're the Padres, you need to respond. I know they've made some deals, but then if you're the Giants, you're leading the West, you got to respond. There's other teams. If you're, you know, in the East watching the Yankees add Anthony Rizzo, I'm sorry, Timmy. And that was some emotional stuff watching Anthony Rizzo with his family out there taking pictures in front of the Ivy and walking. He was very sad. And they didn't even put him in his lamp in the last game to say goodbye. That was crap. But Anthony Rizzo goes to the Yankees. Joey Gallo goes to the Yankees. So I'm thinking, hey, maybe there's some teams that are desperate. And now they're really like, hey, we got to do something. Call Kansas City. Call the Royals. And so who knows what's going to happen between now. They did trade Danny Duffy yesterday, but there's an update from John Morosi. And so we'll get are you the Cubs are turning it down, Timmy? Are you angry? Are you saying this is what needs to happen? Do you want Chris Bryant to go now today? Do you want Craig Kimbrell? How do you feel about the Yankee or the Cubs selling and trading Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees? Are you furious or are you glad it's happening?
I mean, I'm upset. I love Anthony Rizzo. He's been a good player on the Cubs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they know they need to do this. You know, Bryant needs to go. Kimbrell needs to go. I'm sure there'll be maybe one or two other guys that are going to go. And, you know, they got to build up. Their minor league system has been just decimated through the moves that they made to try to get to that World Series. And now they're starting to build that back up. And, yeah, they have to do it. It breaks your heart. It's just part of it, though. You have to understand that it's like we said, it's a business, not personal. They got to make their moves. And, you know, and I'm glad for Anthony Rizzo because I'd like to see Anthony Rizzo have an opportunity again to win a World Series. And I know it's the Yankees. I'm not a huge Yankee fan, but I'm an Anthony Rizzo fan, so we'll see what happens.
We're going to talk about the offensive line with Tim Grunhard after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the show. Let's rejoin Tim Grunhard as we've been talking Chiefs football with Timmy, who's down in Florida waiting for an oven, a stove. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, waiting to get see if we can get an oven delivered here.
Yeah.
We don't have an oven.
Right.
We have a microwave. We have a stove top.
Get you an air fryer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a little air fryer. We got all those things. We just don't have an oven. So
how about
it's amazing how you realize how much you do use your oven.
Yeah.
You know, you can't throw any frozen pizzas in, that's for sure.
That's right. Timmy, let's talk about the offensive line. As training camp started, the running with the ones, you had Orlando Brown and Joe Tooney, and then Creed Humphrey at center, Trey Brown at the other guard spot, and then Mike Remmers. There's no surprise really there, except for the fact that you've got two rookies right there in the interior offensive line, and I'm just curious, is that and look, people, I mean, you know, Jeff Schwartz and Lewis Riddick, they've all been talking about the Chiefs rebuilt offensive line and the fact that, you know, they obviously love Creed Humphrey. They love the guys that they've added, but Is this more of a comment about, okay, Trey Smith he's the steal of the draft, and we want to, you know what, we're going to go with the best five guys, and he's one of them? Or is this LDT opted out last year, and it's going to take him a while to get him back up to speed? I mean, what do you take away from Trey Smith running with the ones right next to another rookie in Creed Humphrey? Does that remind you of Tim Grunhard and Dave Zott on the offensive line years ago?
Yeah, it does. It really does, and I think it's kind of cool. And I'm rooting for Trey Smith, and he's a big physical guy, and he slipped in the draft not really because of anything he did. This is because he has some medical issues that scared some people off. So I think it's a great pickup for Brett Veach and the Chiefs, and I like the kid. He's a big physical, tough kid, and really that's what this offensive line's personality, I believe, is going to be this year. I think they'll be good at pass protection. I mean, I think they'll be real good at pass protection. But the one thing I do think that they're going to be able to do is run the ball. And if you look at kind of the way the Chiefs have set this offensive lineup, really starting in the offseason, Because the point of emphasis for the Chiefs this year was to straighten out this offensive line, not only protect Patrick Mahomes, but, you know, also, you know, be able to maybe run the ball more efficiently and take some pressure off of him also. So, you know, Brown and Tunney are both, you know, big physical guys, good run blockers. You know, Brown is a little bit of a waistbender, but when he gets his body and his hands on people, it's amazing to watch, but he's got to do that. And that's one of the things Andy Heck is working on, is making sure that he works on his flexibility and gets on people and doesn't get on people in kind of an awkward position, because when he does that, he is not as good. But when he gets on people and he gets his hands on them, it's over. Humphreys is a guy that they drafted because he's a tough physical kid. He's a smart kid. He's a run blocker. Trey Smith is a run blocker. All right, he's a big physical run blocker. And Remmers is a guy it's between him and Niang. I think Niang is still working through some things because of the year or two that he had off. So to answer your question, I think the Chiefs' personality on this offensive line has been dictated by the personnel, and I think they want to be more physical. They struggled last year in the red zone. They struggled in third down and short and goal line situations. They had to do some tricky things instead of just smash mouth football, which I think they can be able to do this year a little bit better. So the point of emphasis for the Chiefs has been the offensive line. I think it's been the bright spot so far this offseason. I think it's been the bright spot so far in training camp. Now Humphrey struggled a little bit with some snaps, and that's to be expected. You know, he has to realize that the snap is the most important thing. And right now he's got so many things buzzing through his head: communication, calls, assignments, technique, fundamentals, all those things. And guess what? He's going against some really good football players. And when you're at Oklahoma, let's say you play 13 games, maybe four of those games you're going against an elite defensive lineman. Now, when you're in the NFL and you're, you know, running with the Kansas City Chiefs first offensive line, you're going against somebody really good all the time. So, you know, there's some pressure there too, and he's just going to have to get used to that, and he's going to have to get those snaps right, because if he doesn't get those snaps right, it reminds me a little bit of Morris back in the day. You guys remember we were talking about Mitch Morris and how he had his snaps a little bit off, and, you know, and that's all just part of, you know, kind of getting your feet underneath you and your head is spinning so much from doing so many things and thinking about so many things, you forget about the snap, and that's the most important thing. So he'll get it right, and they were working on it after practice yesterday, and he'll get it right. But, you know, that is a concern. I mean, you can't snap the ball over the quarterback's head. You can't be rolling it back there, because if you do, you know, A, it just screws the practice up, and B, you frustrate the quarterback. And all indications are that Patrick Mahomes was cool with it, but there was a couple of times that people told me that he just kind of threw the ball off and said, you know, you don't want your quarterback just flipping the ball, you know, so because the play's dead. So talking about Trey, he'll be okay. But I liked Joe Tunney and a couple of the other offensive linemen who talked to the media earlier in the week, and they're talking about training camp and the importance of training camp for this offensive line. And I think they hit it right on the head, most of the guys, is there's less distractions when you're in training camp. You're in that bubble. So you get to know each other better. And this offensive line, that is really important. Not only the blocking, not only the assignments and all the different things they need to do on the field, off the field, and with communication, they got to get to know each other. And this is a great opportunity for this team to do that, especially on the offensive line. And they said they've had some great bonding. You know, a training table, they sit together, they bounce ideas off each other, they explain things to each other. Tony was talking about they're getting on the same page, and you know, they have this time where they don't have to worry about wives, they don't have to worry about girlfriends, they don't have to worry about kids, they don't have to worry about dogs, they don't have to worry about, you know, all that kind of stuff. All they're worried about is football, and all they're doing is talking football, and that's really good for this offensive line. And Tony was talking about his communication with Brown on the left side. He said that, you know, they've been talking about, hey, what do you see in this situation, and how do you see it, and what kind of adjustment do you want to make? And those are the lines, and those are the phrases, and those are the terms that you want to hear offensive line talk about. When a left guard and a left tackle are saying, hey, what do you see here? Or how you want to make an adjustment on this. if this guy's doing this, are you going to go and jump him, be more aggressive? Are you going to step back and try to, you know, filter him inside? And the guard needs to know that the tackle's doing those things, and the communication and what they see and how they see it and how they're going to go about doing their business is so important. So that's what's going on right now. The Kansas City Chiefs offensive line, I think, is going to be very, very good by the end of the year. And they could be good right off the bat, but I do think they'll get better as the year goes on. You have a young center who's communicating to everybody. You're going to have a young guard playing in there who's going to, he's going to be hit or miss. He's going to make some really good plays, and he's going to smash some people, but he's going to get beat. That's just the nature of the beast. You have a left tackle who's basically new at that position, who has been in a run-oriented pass, play-action pass, protection-oriented offense with Baltimore, and he's going to have to pick up some different things. You have a new left guard who is in New England who is not here. Now here you have Remmers, who struggled in the Super Bowl, and now he's got to knock that rust off and get his confidence back. And so there's a lot of things that they have to work through. This training camp is really, really important for them to get them going. But they may have some issues earlier in the year. But I think as this offensive line comes together with the depth that they have, that it's going to be a really good offensive line.
So how much more complicated is it for those guys in Andy Reid's scheme on the offensive line? We always hear about how complicated his offense is, and you're talking about these different communication things. Is that the case for any offensive line, or is it more difficult because of the complexity of Andy Reid's offense?
Yeah, that's a great question. And listen, I haven't been in a meeting room with Andy Reid, but I think I have the answer. I don't think it's that much more difficult for the offensive line as far as his responsibilities, the fundamental technique and assignments. I think that Andy Reid's offense, he has a lot of window dressing, a lot of formations, a lot of movement, a lot of different things for defenses to look at. But I think, and this is just a guess, and I think it's a pretty good guess because, you know, I've kind of lived in this world a little bit back when Hackett was there with the West Coast offense. It's a little bit similar to this, that the offensive line, they probably have three or four protections, and that's it. And all the different things that you see are all window dressing to confuse the defenses with formations and movements and everything else. But the offensive line basically has their protections, and they're not changing. Run game, you're going to see different formations. They're going to look like different plays. They're going to look like different looks. But basically, they probably have 8 to 10 runs. And you know, and I would say that 4 or 5 of them are zone run concepts. Maybe 3 or 4 of them are gap concepts. And, you know, you got some different things with some reverses and everything else. But the basic meat and potatoes of the offense is basically the same, but it looks different because of formations. It looks different because of personnel. It looks different because of movement. But the offensive line assignments aren't as complicated as what Andy Reid wants the defensive coordinators to see his offensive scheme as, if that makes sense to you. So, you know, you may run inside zone out of 5 or 6 different formations, which to a defensive coordinator, defense looks different. But for the offensive line, it's the same. You know, you may get a different look defensively, but your assignment stays the same. So it is. You don't want to trick yourselves, especially up front. So you try to keep things as simple as possible, and you make adjustments by the defense and go from there. So. I don't think it's as complicated as the offense looks, because that's what Andy Reid wants. He wants it to look complicated.
Tim Grunhard is our guest. All right, Timmy, I want to go back to Noah Gray, because you brought him up last week. And again, we've talked about when Louis Riddick tweets something, you should pay attention because he has good sources inside the Chiefs organization, and he's one of the voices. He was one of the voices of Monday Night Football. He's not going to tweet out something that's going to make him look stupid. And so he tweeted out last night, and this got me excited. He just tweeted, Noah Gray, tight end. Don't forget the name. He is going to be fire emoji. Hashtag Chiefs Kingdom. You talked about him last week, and then you talked about when Kelce left practice, and Mahomes was talking about how he trusts Noah Gray. They hooked up for some big plays in practice yesterday. I don't want to go overboard. He's a rookie. Travis Kelce's the man. They've got the Blake Bell, the belldozer. But I am excited to watch him, Timmy. You've talked to people that saw him up close. Mm-hmm. This is getting, I mean, there's always a guy in camp that we get excited about and fired up about. Tell me what real expectations should be for a guy like Noah Gray and the role he'll play on this team.
Well, I think expectations should be high for him. Andy Reid really likes to run two tight end formations. He likes to run the what they call the 12 formation with one back and two tight ends. And why not hold this kid up to a standard that I think he can live up to? I think he's a smart kid. I think he's very athletic. And I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but the Kansas City Chiefs have done pretty good in the draft with tight ends. And, I played with one that was really, really good. He was a Hall of Famer. And then the next one they passed it on to was Travis Kelce, who's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's really, really good, maybe the best of all time.
There we go.
And then now you have another guy that he can develop under Travis Kelce. They're calling him Baby Kelce. And Travis has just gushed over the kid that he is, really dug into the playbook and moves really smoothly. He's got really good hands. So especially with the wide receiver position kind of being a question mark, why not take a little bit of pressure off of that second/third receiver battle and say you have another tight end that can give you another option? So, you have maybe Noah Gray lined up connected or to the line, to the offensive line in a kind of a six-man line type of deal, and you flex out Travis Kelce and you run a couple hitches and some slants with those two. That causes a lot of issues for safeties and linebackers. And who are you going to cover if you have Travis Kelce in the slot and he's running a slant, and then all of a sudden you have Noah Gray running out? That safety's going to jump on Travis Kelce, and then you have maybe a Mike linebacker trying to cover an out with Noah Gray. He's got some good speed and catch the ball, and all he's really got to do is be one guy, and it's going to be a big play. So, and the other thing is, I know this for a fact, that Brett Veach loves Noah Gray, that Brett Veach has been gushing over Noah Gray since the draft, and they've been watching a lot of film on him, not only when he was at Duke, recently, to see what he can do and what he can do well, and then also, during OTAs and in minicamp and everything else, they're very, very excited about the progress he's made. So, yeah, he could be a camp darling. He could flame out. I don't see that happening. I think he's going to be a nice option. Travis Kelce is still going to be the big target at the tight end position, but, if you get this kid 40 catches or something like that, maybe, five touchdowns, that could be a really nice start for him in his career.
And if he does that, Jake will never live it down that he didn't draft him in his dynasty rookie draft. What a huge blunder so far right now from Jake Gutierrez. Hey, Timmy, thank you so much for the time. Good stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Boy, if he 40 catches and 5 touchdowns, if you passed on that, that's very hard for the outsiders to bounce back from that type of mistake.
We'll see.
Back after this on WHB.